Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we're talking about the rise of synthetic drug use in the D.C. Metro. My guests are Dr. Tanya Royster, director of the D.C. Department of Behavioral Health, and Horace Anding, a former drug user and now drug counselor here in Washington, D.C. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tracy, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Tracy. What's on your mind? Tracy, are you there? Give me a call back if you can. Doctor, talk to me a little bit about the effect that these drugs have on not only on the physical body, but also the mental state of a user or abuser.
As Horace stated earlier, they have significant and quite varied effects. So the problem is some people may take the drug and become almost stupefied, hence the kind of nomenclature of zombie effect.
Yes.
They will be laying on the ground, really almost unresponsive, looking like they're nearly dead. And other people will be quite agitated. Their heart will be racing. They'll be pounding. They'll be psychotic, hearing voices, seeing things that aren't real and quite dangerous to themselves and other people and every presentation in between. And you don't know when you take that pack of Scooby or K2 what reaction you're going to have because this is so impure and so mixed up in combination.
I'm really kind of stupefied in just thinking about, you know, the effect that this is having on, you know, on our community. And one of the things I did want to say, we had in that previous call, the caller, Alexandria, was talking about the legalization of marijuana. This and that are two totally different things.
Totally different.
Talk to me about that, Horace.
We're talking about a drug with the synthetic,
cannabinoid.
Yeah, yeah, tongue twister of a word.
Listen
certainly
to some of the psychotic effects that this stuff has on the brain: extreme anxiety, confusion, paranoia, hallucinations. As Dr. Horace said, very rapid heartbeat, vomiting, violent behavior, suicidal thoughts, severe headaches, anxiety, depression. And think about an 18, 19, 20-year-old young man or young woman who has developed these things when, according to some medical documentation, their brains have not fully developed. And now they got these type of drugs inside of their brain, and it is killing our young people. It is destroying our communities. We were talking before we got in, Mr. Fisher, how readily available and cheap this drug is. We're talking about from a dollar to $10.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Who can't get a dollar in the black neighborhood?
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking one joint that can change our young people's whole life and even kill them forever.
Mm-hmm.
That's how dangerous these drugs are.
Talk to me, and that's the thing I wanted to ask. How dangerous are they to one's health? I mean, is this just a get high, or can it kill you?
Oh, absolutely, it can kill you. And I think the biggest thing that both Horace and I would reinforce is the unpredictability. And so,
yes,
particularly with young people, one person takes it and they look like a zombie and they're laid out. You think it's funny. The next person takes it and they're dead. And there's no way to predict. There's no condition that can tell us who can take what and how much. So it has significant diverse effects on the body. And we only know about the acute state. We,
yes,
only know right around the intoxication state. It hasn't been around long enough for us to study these brains and look at people over time and see what's going to happen in 3 years, 5 years, 10 years,
yeah,
which
true
is even more scary.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Maurice calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Maurice. What's on your mind?
I mean, I'm listening to everybody make excuses about the government and everybody else. And my thing is, we all have a choice when we go in any store to buy anything or buy it off a store, up the street, or anything. If you know something's not good for you, my thing is, don't take it.
Hmm.
And people see these drugs out there, and they know they're not good for them, and they'll take them anyway because they see the set of other people from taking them. I got a cousin who walked around like a mummy for 3 months, turned his mouth around and everything. He's walking like he's in the air. And we took him to the hospital. they said, we got so many people back there because he wouldn't give them his name and date of birth. So they just say, take them back home. Wow. So my thing is, just don't take the drugs. They know where to get the people. They see it every day.
And we're
every
trying
community,
to,
not just the black community, every community.
Maurice, thank you so much. Go ahead.
And we're trying support the community with knowledge. So we have public awareness campaigns out to make sure that people know how dangerous these drugs are. We have one K2 Zombie DC aimed at young people, and then an older one, K2 Zombie DC Adults, that is really aimed at the 18 to 35 year old population, where we saw a spike unexpectedly in this use of this medication.
How do you treat this, not only from a counseling point of view, but also medically? Horace, talk to me about how you counsel someone. Is it the same way that you would counsel someone who may be addicted to heroin or cocaine, or is this a different kind of challenge for you?
This is a very different kind of challenge, because you're talking about a severe mental health client who, in a very short period of time, can develop bipolar, schizophrenia, and they're not taking medication. If they are taking it, they're not stable with it. So there's a number of ways to treat it, but it's very difficult because of the severity of this drug on the body, particularly on the brain. When a person comes to your office and they smoked a lot of K2 and they're really not stable,
they're not listening to you, I would imagine.
They're
not there.
They can't listen to you. And you're looking at an individual that you know there's hope for him or her, but at the same time, you got to fight through the mental health part to get to the drug part, and that's kind of difficult when that person can't sit still. They're very argumentative. They don't even acknowledge what they're doing is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of challenging to counsel a person on the synthetic drug as opposed to a person that, I know I'm hooked on crack. I know I got a crack problem. I know I have a heroin or PCP problem. And I want to go to treatment, Mr. Adner. Mm-hmm. But this K2 is, you know, I'm okay. I just need to chill out for a few days, and I'm going to be okay. And then you wind up, as Dr. Royster was saying earlier, where the next one takes it and they dies.
I'm trying to understand the medical piece to this, because, again, when I think about synthetic drugs, you know, I think about the powder cocaine to crack cocaine, where, you know, there is that chemical process. Mm-hmm. And as we know from history, the crack cocaine was reputed to be, you know, one smoke and you're hooked. Mm-hmm. Is that the same thing?
I don't think we know fully chemically what or why, but what we do know, as Horace said, is that when people use it, they feel relief. And so that engenders them to want to use it again, even though they may have seen the person next to them just get carried away in an ambulance. Tomorrow, when you wake up and you're still dealing with the same things, the immediate cheap relief is very difficult to avoid. So treatment programs really have to work on the person's motivation and also the other parts of their life that need to be improved, repaired, recovered, so that this doesn't become the option that works the best.
Exactly.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Warren, calling from Virginia. Thanks for calling, Warren. What's on your mind?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing okay.
All righty. I like to comment on that synthetic marijuana.
Go ahead.
Well, originally I'm from Baltimore, Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
My daughter, Brianna, started smoking synthetic marijuana in Baltimore. I moved to Virginia Beach. She got put her in a school in Virginia Beach. She got in with the bad crowd, with the peer pressure. She started smoking it in Virginia Beach. Once I found out she was smoking it, I had her admitted into a hospital. Once she was admitted, the doctor told me that, hey, that synthetic marijuana destroys brain cells. I asked the doctor what can be done. They did not know enough about it to treat it. So I said, okay. So I moved from Virginia Beach to another part of Virginia and enrolled her in school. Again, she found the bad crowd. Started smoking again. I'm 6'5", 300 pounds. About 35, 40 days ago, my daughter attacked in my own house.
Mm-hmm.
Had to call the police, had her removed from the house.
How old is she?
She's 17 years old and 5 months now. 17 and a half. And unfortunately, I had to turn her over to the Department of Social Service.
Mm-hmm.
Because I couldn't control her.
Where is she now, Warren? What's her status now?
She's living in a foster home.
Mm. Wow.
I've tried everything that I humanly could. But that drug, that synthetic marijuana, I noticed this gentleman earlier said crack cocaine,
mm-hmm.
once you smoke it, you're hooked. That's crack. Synthetic marijuana, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Crack cocaine, everybody I know that's smoking will have used it. They're not hooked to that. Mm. But earlier in your show, you said it's made, the young lady said it's made from people's garages,
mm-hmm.
their backyards, their trunk of their car, whatever. Yes, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
I found it in my house.
Mm-hmm.
I called the police about it. They told me if they didn't catch it on her, there's nothing they can do about it.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and everybody is, you know, saying this, saying that, or pointing their finger this way, or pointing in that direction. But somebody needs to come up with something, because I look at it this way. If we can go to war to fight over oil,
mm-hmm.
if we can go to war to fight over what some former president did, mistakes they, that happened, why we can't go over war about what's going on here in our own backyard?
But Warren, my heart breaks for you, and we can only, you know, hope that your daughter will find some way to recover, and you know we are sure that you've done everything, that you can. But thank you for sharing with us and really illustrating the breadth and depth of this problem. So again, thank you so much for sharing with us on the program. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Ahmed, calling from D.C., what's on your mind? Let's go to him. Go ahead.
Hello, how you guys doing today?
Doing just fine.
Yeah, such a sad situation that we're talking about, but one of the elephant in the room about this situation is how it starts, where it starts in terms of a community perspective. We have individuals, returned citizens, that's coming back to District of Columbia that are in our area halfway houses, and they're getting turned out on this drug there. The District of Columbia does not have what it takes to test for this this drug. It doesn't come on the screening of the urinalysis. So you have them going back to the halfway houses and causing a myriad of problems. Some of them are assaulting staff, assaulting others, and some of them coming back to the society with violent offenses, compounded dealing with a destructive drug such as this. So we're dealing with a monster here that I only think is going to get worse, and the Bowser administration and administrations that come after her are going to have to tackle this just as ferociously as they did the crack cocaine epidemic in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
This is the monster of our generation, and it's here. It is not going anywhere because how it's packaged.
Yeah.
This is the underlying problem, how it's packaged, and someone said earlier how it's continuously redesigned and redeveloped. So you can find certain chemicals, then what they do, they change the chemical combination and put something other additives in it and just make it just as much more destructive as the previous one was.
Yeah.
So it starts at halfway houses as well for returned citizens who are going back and forth and cannot be admonished for it because they're still, when they urine, it's coming up clean.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts with us. I need to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about some of the other synthetic drugs that are out there. I want to talk, for example, about this bath salt phenomena. What is that about? And take some more of your phone calls. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about synthetic drugs. This is the Inside segment. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our discussion about the rise of synthetic drug use here in the D.C. Metro. My guests are Dr. Tanya Royster, director of the D.C. Department of Behavioral Health, and Horace Handing, a former drug user and now drug counselor here in Washington, D.C. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Dr. Royster, we've been talking so much about the so-called synthetic marijuana, K2, Scooby, and the like. But I mentioned earlier in the program about bath salts, which is one of the things I wanted to ask about. Now, why, what is, how are bath salts, the bath salts that mom poured in the bathtub at the end of a hard week to relax her, how is that now being used or abused as a synthetic drug?
Well, as we kind of talked about, the synthetic cannabinoids in and of themselves, people haven't figured out a way to use them by themselves, so they need a vehicle. And so the potpourri, the bath salts, they become the vehicle that you spray this chemical on, and then people smoke it or do something with it, usually smoke it, to get the high. So yeah, the synthetic cannabinoid becomes, so if you think about it, the stuff that's in the dollar store, you can buy a big bag of potpourri or a big bag of bath salts, and you spray this stuff on it, and you put it into however many little bags, you've made a huge profit.
So, okay, because I was about to ask about the potpourri thing, and this is obviously a learning experience. I was under the impression that people were just buying potpourri and attempting to smoke it, which in and of itself, is just a dumb thing anyway. So what you're saying is that they are taking a manufactured chemical and spraying it on on potpourri. Why potpourri? Why not cigarettes? Or why not marijuana?
You know, I don't know. I've wondered that, and I wonder if it had to do with the original name being synthetic marijuana. Potpourri is leafy and brown, and maybe it mimicked the look of marijuana. Maybe it's because it was so cheap and easy to use, and maybe because it could disguise. You could put it right on the counter in a store, and nobody would. So there are probably a wide variety of reasons why that became one of the vehicles as bath salts and other common products.
And so the bath salts are also what's smoked? It's a
combination of things are mixed together with all this, Mr. Fisher, and it's again, it becomes readily available, very cheap. But at the same time, when you're putting these type of chemicals together, you're talking about a lethal weapon that is worse than a 9mm gun. One hit can kill you. One joint will put you in prison or jail for life with no parole because of the damage that you can do to hurt somebody or hurt yourself. So there is a combination of these, the bath salt and the potpourri and the spray and anything else that the drug dealer will get his hands on, because all he wants to do is make money. He doesn't care about the young lady, the gentleman that took his daughter to the hospital and the doctor turned her away. He doesn't care about that. He wants money. She wants money. And that's what this is all about. Again, it's readily available. It's very cheap, but it's very powerful and very deadly. And in our community, what really bothers me with it is sold in our community to our people. And like one caller said earlier, nowhere else can you go in some of these other high-profile communities or neighborhoods and buy this stuff, because the people work together in those communities to make sure that the stores are not going to sell this stuff. And the stores that are selling it in the black communities right now, they need to be taken out of business, because people are telling us at our level of counseling them how they're getting it. They're selling it in the back. You can go in and buy something else, and then you can just ask for something else and a very cold name.
Cold names.
And you'll get it readily available. And so they're still selling it in some of these stores in D.C. So I'm not at that level where laws can be changed and things of that nature, but I do know this much. Until they change some of these laws, like Dr. Royster was saying earlier, they really need to not just one time, or after twice, they're out of business, one time, and then you're totally out of business, period. Because you are providing nothing more than illegal death to our community and to our kids.
When you have counseled people who are using these synthetic drugs, have you had any successes with people who have been able to kick their addiction?
Very few. But we have gotten some success because some people, it only takes one bad trip, as they'll call it, one bad episode, and they'll be like, you know what? I can't do this. Mm-hmm. I can't live like this, you know? And that person has a strong desire to want to really understand, number one, how they got to the point to start smoking this stuff. So we have to break it down to them through case management and counseling and therapy and psychiatry and things of that nature. They have to get some medication to kind of stabilize them a little bit. And then, of course, they get some treatment and some ongoing individual and group therapy. But, yes, we get some success, but not like we should get. Mm-hmm. This is a very different drug like we've never seen before. We're still looking at it. We're still trying to find our way to better serve and help people. But we do get some success.
And I think that success is going to be enhanced by the multi-pronged approaches that we're trying to put in place.
Exactly.
So the legal reinforcement, the laws,
yes.
The public awareness campaigns to make sure that people understand the dangers going towards children and going towards adult treatment programs, making sure that we have every facet and avenue, including addressing the underlying causes of why people use drugs, right? So making sure there are mental health services available, making sure that housing resources are available, job programs are available, that because people are reentering, they're not penalized for other opportunities. All of those things are going to decrease the chance that people are going to start out on these drugs.
Yes. Dr. Royce, you mentioned earlier about some of the initiatives that the D.C. government is doing to help try to stem the tide of mm-hmm. this. Can you talk to me a little more in detail about what these programs are doing and what the government is trying to get out there?
Well, as I said, we have a multi-pronged approach, and we are working collaboratively with the police, with the state's attorney, with the health officers and the fire and EMS to hit every avenue that we can to address these issues. So EMS, and we're also reaching out our outreach workers to the homeless population because, again, the cheapness, you know, the low cost of this drug, that makes them a very vulnerable population. So we're providing information. We're providing more law enforcement. We're coming down on sentencing and parole and every approach that we can. They do call-ins so that people who are on parole or probation, they get called in more regularly or more frequently to make sure that they have information, that they're getting their needs met so that they don't fall prey to this in the community.
How do you reach out to the homeless population?
There are a wide variety of organizations in the district that have homeless outreach workers. Sometimes they're called navigators, and they go to where...
Like UPO, for example?
Yes, yeah. Like mm-hmm. Yes, and they're all over the city, and, you know, everyone kind of has their territory, and they know the homeless people in that area very well. And so we've produced campaign, their material that they can have in hand, so they talk to them about it, then they leave them with that information. They come back and check on them repeatedly and try to stem the tide of this wave.
Who is most at risk when it comes to the use of these drugs?
I mean, I think, unfortunately, it's an equal opportunity drug because it is so cheap and because it is so readily available. While it is sold predominantly in urban minority communities, what we know is that people come from Wisconsin Avenue and people from Maryland and Virginia. They know where this stuff is and they go there and get it. So you may go to one of these areas and you may see somebody laying on the ground in a suit and tie. But if they're lucky enough to get up, they go back to the suburbs. Right. So it's unfortunate that the large number of people that we see are certainly more vulnerable. But there is a wide variety of people that are using this drug.
Hmm. You want to say?
These type of drugs and all type of drugs don't discriminate. They don't. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter what age, race, religion, sexual orientation. Doesn't matter. Drugs is drugs. Mm-hmm. And people use to it some type of pain that has happened in their life. Mm-hmm. And going back to counseling them, once you can begin to peel back some of these layers of the pain of what's really taking place into their lives, then you can show them there's another way out of this life of this synthetic drug and this illegal substance abuse altogether.
If you're a parent, how do you know if this may be an issue developing for your child? What should you look for?
Any kind of strange or unusual change in behavior or patterns, if your child is more secretive, if your child is suddenly hanging out with different people, if your child's grades drop, if their sleep becomes erratic or problematic, or if they become irritable and aggressive and that's not your child, you know, any sign that your child's behavior or mood or emotion is substantially different, that's something to reach out and have concern about.
I only have about 2 minutes left. Some final words about this this situation. And I must say that just listening to your experiences and your expertise, I find this chilling because even with all of the efforts of both of you and those like you, it doesn't seem to be an answer as of yet. But I just want some final thoughts from you, Horace, and Dr. Royster.
I want to first thank you guys for having me back again. But most importantly, I want to express my condolences to Corey Mastersbury and on behalf of Christopher Berry. I know that was very devastating. Words can't describe what happened when she got that call about Christopher a week or so ago. I will say this. If you are struggling with any illegal drug, but particularly this synthetic cannabinoid drug, please seek help. Please contact Department of Behavioral Health in D.C. Please contact somebody professionally that can help you, because you're putting your life at risk and you're really putting your family at risk also from being very devastated from this whole process.
Dr. Royster, real quick, your final thoughts.
Yes, please do reach out. We can, if you need information for yourself or your family member, call us at 1-888-7-WE-HELP, which is 888-793-4357. Go to the website, k2zombiedc.com. You can download information. You can share it with people. Recovery is possible. But it is a difficult road, particularly for these synthetic cannabinoids.
Yes. Well, I'll make sure that I post that information on our website, whur.com, after the broadcast. Dr. Tanya Royster, Horace Anding, thank you both for sharing with us. I really appreciate it. That is The Daily Drum on Sirius XM, Channel 141, for this Thursday, August 18th. I'm Harold Fisher. You can